Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. That is for sure. Hey, listen, folks, go to our website, theunionedge.com. That's theunionedge.com. Download the free app for your iPhone or your Android. You can listen to this program live anywhere in the world. You can listen to the podcast. It also does a number of other really neat things. And we've got a contest coming up here very soon. Host the program for a day. And we'll talk about that some more. But in the meantime, back to business. Joining us now by phone, Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Rick, welcome back.
Charles, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Rick. Thank you very much for joining us. I know you're busy. First off, I got to ask you, what's going on with the folks in the House and the Senate for Pennsylvania?
Well, the budget negotiations continue. Governor Wolf's out there promoting probably one of the best budgets that we've ever seen, a real budget, no gimmicks, actually understands that in order to, if you want something like roads, good schools, bridges, all those things that government provides, streetlights, right, correction services, health services, you gotta pay for them. There's no such thing as a free lunch, and he's been pretty smart about how he is asked that in order to deal with property taxes, which are a burden on our seniors with fixed incomes, that those of us who are still working pay a little bit more every pay, and an increase in the personal income tax from 3.07 to 3.7%, something I think that, because it's based on a percentage, those with a little more can pay a little more, those with a little less will pay a little less. But the idea is that everybody gets a break at the property tax level, and even built in a break for renters, for those folks who can't afford to buy their homes or choose to rent. So it's a pretty remarkable budget. Shows what can happen when you get a businessman with a conscience into office, and we're pleased to be helping him out. Of course, on the House and Senate side, the leadership continues to, especially in the Senate, continues to put up anti-labor legislation. Mm-hmm. They continue to try to keep paycheck deception out there. They passed legislation that would preempt sick leave for cities and towns. Now, we've always heard that Republicans are the party of small government, but here they are trying to tell our local governments, the smallest units of governments, what they can and can't do.
Right. Isn't that burdensome overreach that they talk about with the federal government?
Yeah, absolutely. It is overreach. Look, if a city or town or county wants to say, we think providing sick leave, paid sick leave days, so people don't go to work sick in restaurants and those kind of places where they pass on their illnesses. I think that absolutely makes sense, and it's just common sense. Local folks know what local folks need, and it's not up to Harrisburg or Washington to tell them that. And the same thing goes for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but down in D.C. They're passing, they're negotiating a trade agreement that gives this trade court the ability to say that if we want to encourage people to buy stuff made in PA, which we're trying to do in the State House, State Senate, they're saying, no, you can't do preference for local products. Well, I'm a Pennsylvanian. I want to buy stuff made in PA if I can.
Right.
To help my, local merchants.
Right.
It's as simple as that. And this idea that people know better, whether it's in Harrisburg or D.C., I put a lot of faith in our local governments. Don't always agree with them, but I think by and large, they're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, and the other thing is it's one thing for somebody in Harrisburg or somebody in D.C. to make these kinds of decisions. If they're done locally, that person who made the decision's got to look you in the face at the local restaurant or something like that.
That used to be the case with Congress, but as the districts have gotten bigger and more gerrymandered, right, we hardly ever see Lou Barletta down here in the southern end of the district because it's so big. When it was, just Luzerne County and some extra places, you might see the congressman. up there, but they've drawn these districts so they can get elected without opposition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes all the way from Carlisle to Wilkes-Barre, and chances are, you know, we're not going to sit there and see him face to face on any given day and talk to him about the local issues. So he sits there and listens to lobbyists in D.C. instead of his constituents, mm-hmm. and you know, makes decisions based on what they tell him, not on what might be good for the 11th congressional district. So, yeah, there's a real disconnect from our elected officials as districts get bigger because of increased population, the need for more money to run in these districts, the gerrymandering, are all conspiring to pretty much disenfranchise the local folks, where you never see your congressman or, you know, and they have to work at it. Senator Casey does a great job and stood up for us, by the way, on Fast Track and
right.
Pacific Trade Partnership Agreement, stood up strong. He still, you know, he tries to get around the state as much as he can, given the schedule in D.C. But, yeah, I'm jumping all over the place here, Charles, but one other issue that did pass the House was this bill that they call it stalking legislation, that somehow union folks are stalking people while we're out organizing or on a picket line. But, you know, that bill, the exemption we had under the stalking bill that was passed in 93, that exemption was to parties involved in a labor dispute. Didn't say labor, said parties involved. That means labor and management. We're protected when we were in a particularly tough strike. You know, management's always out there with their cameras filming the strikers and the organizing drives. They tend to follow them into bathrooms. They go to their houses. And, you know, we do home visits. We're out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was basically let the – and there are laws against violence on the picket line. You know, plenty of laws
right.
against that, and we just – sent some folks to jail, some labor leaders to jail, unfortunately, who overstepped their bounds. And the law worked. So to put another law in the books that specifically tries to target union folks from organizing or, you know, conducting a peaceful picket line was just absurd. And we had a number of Republicans stand with us, you know, pro. And so, I think we got 84 votes out of 109. There were a bunch of people missing. 109 passed and for it and 84 against it. So, you know, we continue to work with our friends on the Republican. You know, this
right.
isn't Republicans and Democrats. This is pro-worker, anti-worker.
Right. And Rick, you know this as well as I do. A third of the membership here in Pennsylvania are Republicans.
Absolutely.
You know,
You know, we work with Republicans if they want to work with us. Unfortunately, you have these national groups who have decided that labor, working men and women in this country, are the enemy. And they, in order for their, you know, people down at the, you know, the state level, in order for them to get the money that they want or need, they got to toe the line. And, you know, we see it all the time now that this group ALEC and the Koch brothers, they just funnel money into these phony baloney think tanks like Commonwealth Foundation who write these bogus reports about things that don't exist. And, you know, these ideologues in the House and Senate now just toe the line without doing any kind of independent research on their own to find out if what's being said is true or not. Because it fits their agenda, right?
Right.
Truth isn't part of that agenda.
Yeah, you know, and here's the deal. I mean, the things that they're trying to come up with, my God. Why is it, you know, we've got military recruiters driving Hyundais here in the United States? And I'm not talking about their personal car. I'm talking about their government car. Okay?
Right.
Because, you know, we've got these people that legislate this kind of, oh, well, it's okay. You don't have to buy American or you don't have to buy Pennsylvanian. You know, really? I mean, this does not help the country. This attitude, this perception does not, you know, help working folks in this country, and they are only in it for one reason and one reason only, and that's to put additional money, additional funding into their pockets at the expense of everybody else. And Rick, we got to stand up and we got to fight against this.
Well, and that's the sad part. You know, our parents and grandparents you know, they understood that the corporations were there to enrich themselves, and they formed unions, and they fought together, and they understood that the person standing next to you, whether it was in a garment shop and you were sewing and it was your mom or grandma, or it was the guy in the steel mill who was making steel, the person next to you, you had more in common with him than the owner of the steel mill. Anymore, they have, and it's because of the, you know, decline of union density. We don't get to talk to as many people as we used to, but, and they also, you know, they buy up the media outlets. But they've convinced middle class or lower middle class or folks at minimum wage, barely able to make a living, they've convinced them that somehow that worker who makes $40,000 a year instead of $20,000 is their enemy rather than the person who makes $10 million a year.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, they just continue to try to bleed every ounce of wealth out of the American worker, whether they're union or non-union.
Right.
You know, this accumulation of wealth at the top is absolutely obscene, and it needs to stop, and we need to, the way to stop it is to organize into unions. The way to stop it is to fight together, as you said, fight together, stand up, support each other. Collective action is what works, and working together is what works. I mean, the rich get it. They hang out at their country clubs and plot the strategies that take money out of the pockets of workers. Why can't workers get together in unions and bargain at the table for the share of the productivity that they're delivering for that boss to make him rich?
Right.
And they won't put money into their pockets. You know, it's absurd that, you know, you see people driving 20-year-old cars that rusted out and stuff, and then they got a prominent Republican candidate for president on the back of it, whether it's Bush Cheney or McCain. You know, it's like, don't you folks get it? These folks are supporting the people who are taking money out of your pockets.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Rick, listen, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back and we'll talk some more. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
This is Chris Garlock, the Union Edge's man in D.C. The Metro Washington Council AFL-CIO works to promote social justice for all working people in the nation's capital. Each year, the council coordinates strategy and organizes demonstrations to support the local fight for workers' rights. The council also provides emergency services and legal counseling for workers and supports politicians who advocate for workers' issues. For the latest local labor news, follow us at Twitter at DC Labor and check out our website at dclabor.org.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace. Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in with us. We appreciate you hanging out. Right now on the phone with me, we've got Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Rick, welcome back.
Thank you, Charles.
Hey, Rick, you know, just I was talking with our friend Stuart Acuff the other day from 1199. Between SEIU and 1199, we picked up another 20,000 members here in the state of Pennsylvania. Not bad.
No, it's a great victory, and unfortunately, the armies of the right have challenged it, Governor Wolf's executive order in court that allowed people to have a voice at work to sit down and talk about how can we make these companies, it's over the home care workers, and how they, because you have all these small agencies with all kinds of different rules. And you have these folks who work for anywhere from $8 to $12-13 an hour, mm-hmm. Depending on the agency, and all kinds of crazy rules. And, you know, this is just an attempt to get these folks a voice at work, to talk about the training and the kinds of things that they need in order to become better at their jobs of caring for the elderly and the sick in their homes.
Right.
So it is a great victory, and we look forward to welcoming those 20,000 members into the labor fold and working together to lift them up, and together we lift everybody up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Rick, and it's funny because we get these stellar victories here in Pennsylvania, and I think it's going to hold. It's probably going to hold. The Pennsylvanians get it. But, you know, you go out to California, and we've got some really bizarre stuff coming down the road from the ALEC people and the National Right to Work people. They actually have somebody that's acting as a shill for them who has said, no, I don't want to pay union dues. I don't want to pay for union services. I want it all for free. Oh, I want the collateral benefits for free. So if the union negotiates something with a car dealership for a discount, I want that too. And, by the way, I also want to be able to vote on union elections, and I want to be able to tell the union what I want them to do for me for free.
Well, and that, you know, there seems to be, back in a few years ago, there was, you know, everybody was talking about the me generation and
right.
This group of people, and maybe it's the baby boomers, who knows, but mostly it's those folks who want something for nothing, and they tend to be, conservative. They don't want to pitch in, but they want everything for free. And, you know, it's all about them, me, rather than us, which is what a union is. It's about us lifting everybody up. And we have these people who are, you know, and you can see them. They're the Sarah Palins of the world. It's all about me. It's all about me. You know, I want to be on TV. I want to be famous. It's those kind of folks that don't care about, you know, those that have less than them or those that aren't doing as well. You know, we really got to lift each other up. And, you know, John Kennedy said it best, a rising tide lifts all boats. That means if everybody's doing well, then even those folks at the top will do well. We'll lift their boat if you give us the chance. But, again, unfortunately, I wish every employer was a good employer, but they're not, which is why you have unions. Because we have to be at the bargaining table, as we were in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And just briefly, I got in a discussion. I was on a TV show that last week and got in a discussion with a woman who said, you know, I wish, you know, you unions have destroyed it all. I wish it was back in the 50s, you know, my mom could stay home. And I said to her, well, that's probably because your dad had a union job and was able to make enough so that parents could make a choice about whether one of them wanted to stay home. People forget that
right.
These Hallison days they talk about in the 50s and 60s, Union membership was in 30% of the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So employers were forced to give people good wages because they did. The ones that were union worked with us and bargained with us. The ones that didn't want to be union had to keep their wages high enough so that they could fight off unionization.
Right.
So,
yeah, and Rick, you know, those very same people that say, oh, you unions have ruined everything, they're going to take their Saturdays and Sundays off, right?
Oh, absolutely. They're going to take their Social Security and their Medicare and their, you know, every other thing that unions have fought for.
And does she want the same pay that her male counterparts gets?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm sure she does.
And does she want those emergency exits in the movie theater to open outward as opposed to inward so people can get out of the building? You know, another thing that unions fought for, you know, health and safety-wise. You know, she wants, and again, this is another one of those me types as opposed to we, us, and ours.
Right.
She wants it, but she doesn't want you to have it.
You know, I was talking to Governor Wolf the other day, and we were talking about right to work, and he said, Rick, let me just say something to you here. And he said, I was talking to some Amish fellows, and they were asking about right to work. And he said, and, you know, this is something probably kind of exclusive to Pennsylvania. Maybe the rest of the world doesn't get it. He said to the Amish guy, he said, look, when you guys, you know, you're known for when a family's in trouble, a barn burns down or somebody needs a barn, everybody gets together and helps him build his barn. Now, what if you had an Amish fella who didn't show up to help with the barn raising, but then when his barn burned down, expected everybody else to show up and build his barn? He said, that's the people that support right to work, that person that doesn't want to pitch in and lift everybody up.
Right.
I thought, man, that got to be the best example for Pennsylvania I ever heard about right to work, because, you know, we see it and we hear about, you know, the Amish working to help each other. They're a collective society, right? They mm-hmm. they pitch in. They're a pretty wealthy society, too. But, you know, they help each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they don't – if somebody doesn't show up and then wants help, I think they have a word for that. They call it shunned. And, you know, of course, when we do it in a workplace to have, you know, somebody, a scab or a strike breaker, people, oh, why are you treating them that way? You know, they had a right to – no, yeah. We're in it together.
Absolutely. Hey, Rick, listen, we got to get going, but before you go, how do we find out more about the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO?
Charles, you can follow us on Twitter or Facebook, or you can go to our website, paaflcio.org.
Fantastic. Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, representing about 1 million Pennsylvania families, and we appreciate it very much, Rick. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Charles.
Talk to you soon.